You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Friday. Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. We got two games this weekend, and we're going to start off by talking about one of them against a team the Pacers haven't played yet this year, the Orlando Magic. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and a bunch of other places. And on the line to talk Magic, one of my favorite Magic follows on Twitter, Preston Ellis of Orlando Pinstripe Post SB Nation, and he does a Magic podcast himself. Preston, how are you, man?
What's going on, Pacers fans? We know you guys have Victor Oladipo now, and we are not pleased about it.
What were your thoughts on the Ibaka trade at the time?
I mean, we were all against it at the time, but I think what exemplified the mistake was the Bismack Biyombo signing, not just the dollars paid, but just the big man upon big men. We knew that it was unlikely that the three would be able to play together just two at a time. Serge Ibaka has moved more into a well-suited five role. And we just anticipated at that stage of his career, that's where he was going to be most productive. So it was just a colossal failure from the start, one that Rob Hennigan needed to make at the time. He needed to take his home run swing, and it just didn't pay off for anybody. But it was one of those things at the time, like the famous midnight signing of Timothy Mozgov, where everybody across the association is kind of collectively shrugging their shoulders. Like, was that really necessary?
Oh, man. Rob Hennigan. I feel like me and you could have done a better job than Rob Hennigan running the Orlando Magic.
You're not wrong. I don't want to say that I have any experience in that arena. But with that being said, I would like to think that I would hide my whiteboard anytime posting a photo that's going to be live on the interwebs.
So since Dwight Howard, the Magic have not been great besides a super hot start last year. But this year, 24 games in, 500. We're recording this on Wednesday. I think they play tonight, actually. But after that, who knows if they'll be over 500 or under. But the Magic look pretty good. They're getting good play from a lot of guys. And just tell me why the Magic have been better than they have been in the past this year.
You know, I want to talk about the three, I should say pillars, although four are usually required for such. Terrence Ross, Nikola Vucevic, and Aaron Gordon have all been exemplary this year. And now you've got coming off the bench, Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba. The team has been healthy for the most part. But the biggest part to all of it has been head coach Steve Clifford, who has not only preached to the players, has preached to the media, has preached to the fans, has put it very plainly, stop giving these guys a pass. We don't do moral victories anymore. He said last week, he said, I'm so tired of this shit. Whenever they lost to the Warriors after leading by 18, Aaron Gordon left at halftime with some kind of sore back. But anyway, he held Kevin Durant to 11 points at halftime. They had an 18-point advantage in the third quarter. They had an 11-point advantage in the third quarter against the Blazers. So, of course, we as Magic fans, we're thrilled. We're like, we don't care if we win or lose. Just give us an advantage at some point against these top West Coast teams. But Steve Clifford has said from the start of the season, I think it was the third game of the year against the Philadelphia 76ers. They tied the game with less than 30 seconds left. They ended up losing 116 to 115 because Aaron Gordon missed a last second free throw. And he said no moral victories. And that's the way the Magic have played this year. Just I think Jimmy Butler's first game 2 weeks ago, they were down by 16 early in the fourth, fought back and won that game convincingly. And that's just who the Magic have been this year. They've been dogged defensively. They haven't turned the ball over. This is exactly what we were hoping we would get from Steve Clifford when he left the Hornets.
Yeah, I'm a big Steve Clifford fan. I thought his schemes were good in Charlotte. But I didn't know necessarily defense on the defensive end. You know, I'm a big Frank Vogel guy because he was great in Indy. And I was like, oh, I don't know if you can be better than Frank Vogel on defense for the Mavs. Well, I was very wrong about that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's all about the players just buying in. Obviously, health is a factor to all of it. We were all kind of concerned when we brought Steve Clifford to town because it's like, first of all, he had all those health concerns last year wherein he needed to leave the Hornets for a few weeks. And two, he's kind of the same guy as Frank Vogel, only he's about 10 years older. It's just after all the injuries last year, the Magic led the NBA in injuries last year. I can't remember exactly offhand, but it was something like over 150 games missed to their six best players, including Jonathan Isaac and Terrence Ross, who each missed over 50 games. And when that happens and you lose a big string of games at the beginning of the season, it's just tough to make guys buy in January and February. And then you get to this point in time where you think, do we really need Aaron Gordon for this game? Do we really need Evan Fournier for this game? Do we really need Nikola Vucevic for this game? Nah, let's just give them an extra week of rest. And that's how you continue losing. And now everybody's healthy for the most part. There's been a couple of games missed here and there, but all these guys are playing. All these guys are playing very well. Nikola Vucevic all of a sudden is a surefire all-star behind Joel Embiid. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you check out my article on B-Ball Index, he's pretty much second among centers across the NBA to Joel Embiid in most statistical categories. And then you've got Terrence Ross, who within 10 seconds of entering the floor will hit a three-point shot. So make for that on Friday night. And Aaron Gordon is playing like a first team all defender. He is shutting down guys left and right. They played the Miami Heat last night. Goran Dragic was out, so they put him on Josh Richardson, who didn't score a field goal, I want to say, until early in the fourth quarter. And it was a deep contested three, and it wasn't even against Aaron Gordon. This guy's been playing lights out on both sides of the floor right now. So the Magic aren't an elite team per se, but they play hard and you have to beat them. They are not going to beat themselves.
Yeah, you talked about a lot of guys that I wanted to talk about, so that makes the segues really easy. But I like hearing all about that, about the Orlando Magic. I think it's about time the Magic are good. The Orlando fans deserve this. I want to start with Vucevic. Oh, my gosh. I said Vucevic the entire time on Monday, and now I know that's wrong. Vucevic. I read your B-Ball Index post. It was great. But what really made me dig in the weeds on him is I was writing about Domantas Sabonis potentially. Could have been the Magic pick, Domantas Sabonis, potentially winning most improved player. And I stumbled across Vucevic and I was like, wow, Vucevic is going to win the most improved player. Am I wrong?
Dude, I could not say Doncic for like three solid months this summer. It was getting to an embarrassing point at the time. But we don't need to talk about Sabonis or Oladipo any longer on this podcast because it's just making sure. And Tobias Harris, player of the month, for God's sake, yeah, in Los Angeles. It's just hurtful, all of it. But we are thrilled with Nikola Vucevic, not just on the offensive side of the floor, which is where he's famously been quite good, not just as a rebounder, but also as a post presence. He can score against anybody in the post right now. He took Bam Adebayo to the cleaners the other night. He badly outplayed Joel Embiid in their two matchups, but also defensively, he held Joel Embiid to, I think it was 2 of 13 from 2-point range. Of course, when he's out past the 3-point line and he's playing over a screen, there's only so much you can do. And he hit 4 of 7 from 3-point range in their last contest. But inside the perimeter, when Nikola Vucevic was in his face, 2 of 13, he's just playing lights out on both sides of the floor. And it really helps. Who would have thought it helps when you have good perimeter defenders like a Terrence Ross, like an Aaron Gordon. These guys are healthy. Evan Fournier is playing better defensively. When Wesley Iwundu comes into the game, that dude is a brick wall defensively. Offensively, we're not so much going to talk about him. I guess he's very similar to Andre Roberson in that respect. But defensively, guys cannot get past him on the perimeter in straight one-to-one battles. So the Magic have to be thrilled. Obviously, having a young player like Sabonis would have been a boon at this point. But Nikola Vucevic is only 28. We were talking all offseason about what the Magic were going to be able to get for him in a swap, in a midseason swap. But at this point, the Magic have to go into the summer thinking that they want to re-sign him. That's just how good he's been.
I want to take that audio sentence. I want to clip out the sentence where you just said of, it's helped his defense a ton having good perimeter defenders, and insert it every time I talk about Miles Turner, because it's the same thing with him. When Corey Joseph's out there versus Darren Collison, it's a huge improvement. You know, when they have their best wing defenders out there, it's just crazy how much that helps them. They can expect to do the right rotation when they know that the perimeter defender is going to do the right thing. It's very nice. I'm glad you talked about trading Vucevic, because I might have said it wrong. But I was going to talk about this later in the show. I was looking through the Magic roster at one point this year, and I was like, man, it'd be like a nice to trade for Terrence Ross on his expiring deal. And I'm sure you might have heard this theories about this before, but like, now that they're like not a bad team who might actually make the playoffs, are they even going to trade players? You know, I don't even think that's realistic anymore.
I don't think so either. I also don't think it's realistic to expect the Magic are going to offer any 4 or 5 year contracts this summer, because I think they very much want to be involved in the summer of 2020, when pretty much everyone across the association is going to be available, including Anthony Davis. But with that being said, I think at the early onset of the season, I think there were probably a lot of trades out there featuring bad salary and a mid first round pick for Terrence Ross. But I think now, based on the way he's playing, if the Magic were going to trade him, it wouldn't wouldn't be for bad salary. It would probably be for like Damari Carroll type salary and a first round. Obviously, the Nets aren't somebody who would engage in that kind of trade, but a team who has a usable player or gives back something that could be of value, like a Frank Ntilikina. I hope I said that right. but basically, he's too good to offload for a first round pick. Nobody's going to give him a top 10 first round pick. There's nobody at the bottom of the barrel right now as it stands that's going to make that kind of a risk. But with that being said, the Magic will probably take him into the summer unless they get something like a Prodigy, like somebody who could be turned around like a Ntilikina, like a Markelle Fultz. But I don't think those teams are going to offload those players and an additional pick to it. So more likely than not, the Magic are just going to ride this out. They're probably going to finish as a seventh or an eighth seed, and they're going to be thrilled with that.
I would be too if I were them. That's an incredible turnaround for them after the last couple of seasons, where in my head it's just like, okay, filling out the East standings. All right, Atlanta, Orlando last, Knicks next. You know, it's been easy. Now I'm finally glad Orlando's not the whipping boy. In a matchup with the Pacers specifically, what would you be afraid of from a Magic standpoint? You know, who will they not be able to contain very much, assuming Victor Oladipo does not play?
Honestly, I'm not really worried defensively. It's more offensively that the Magic have been struggling as of late, and it's largely been in part to that second lineup. The first lineup has been quite good with Evan Fournier, DJ Augustine. We talked about him before we got into the podcast. He does not turn the ball over. He leads all starting point guards with just one turnover per game. That's an insane ratio to over five assists. That is elite, top of the NBA right now. So he doesn't need to do too much in terms of scoring, breaking down the defense. All he really does is sits above the three-point line, knocks down jumpers when they come to him, and he doesn't turn the ball over. Evan Fournier has been kind of up and down, but the real concern for the Magic has been the second unit with Jerian Grant. With Jerian Grant on the floor, the Orlando Magic are 10 points per 100 possessions worse. They simply do not score. In the second quarter last night against the Miami Heat, for the first 6 minutes of the second quarter, the Orlando Magic scored 3 points. And That's a referendum on not just Jerian Grant, but those guys as a whole, Wesley Iwundu, Mo Bamba, Jonathan Isaac. These guys don't know how to play functional offense yet, but they're all dynamite defensively. So they're pretty good at keeping it close, but they also go wide spectrums of time without scoring any points at all. This is not an uncommon thread for them. This is something that happens game in and game out. And the only way they can create points with those second units is if they create opportunities defensively. So if the Pacers give up the ball and give them more opportunities in transitions, that's somewhere where they can actually hurt you with those second units. Otherwise, it's going to be up to the Pacers to really take advantage of them offensively, get some points on the board, even if it's just a difference of a 15-6 run in the first 6 minutes of the second quarter. That's going to be their avenue for success against the Magic.
Yeah, Corey Joseph guarding Jerian Grant was actually one of my, like, oh, this could be the good thing for the Pacers this game. It's funny that in my head, when the Magic got Jerian Grant for basically free in that very strange Mozgov trade, right? That's what that came from.
It was not free. I think they overspent to a great degree. Basically, they saved $1 million over the next 2 years, so $2 million, really. And to do that, they gave up 2 second-round picks for Jerian Grant, who is a very useful player defensively. And offensively, I think the first 3 weeks of the season, he was shooting like 10% from three-point range. But then he had a hot streak of like 6-for-9 shooting over the next three games. And all of a sudden, it ballooned up to 40%. Now, I think he's a bit closer to 34-35% after last night. But he's the type of player who can take 3 three-point shots in a row, airball each of them, and then hit the fourth one. You're like, God, we just don't know what to expect with this guy on this end of the floor.
Yeah, Corey Joseph will have a fun time with him in that case. He always has active hands. He's up in guys. He's up in guys' face. He's good at staying in front of his man. He's just a quality defensive point guard, and having him on the second unit's almost unfair at times. Against the Hawks, the whole team is young. He was really good against Trae Young especially, and I look forward to that matchup. That'll be fun for me personally to watch. Another thing I really like is Domantas Sabonis against any young big man. And I understand that Bamba and Isaac are good interior defenders, especially for their age. But at the same time, they're young and not used to seeing good quality post-ups. And Sabonis has been excellent against pretty much any interior defender this season. So I think that's going to be an easy opportunity for the Pacers to score some points.
Yeah, it's kind of hard for me to describe, but I think I would qualify Mo Bamba as a good rim defender, but not necessarily a good post defender.
He's I understand somebody- that.
Yeah, he's somebody who can get played out of his position. He's just a split second late on some rotations, on pick and rolls. Whenever you see guys in a 2-1 pick and roll, the point guard in the center, he just has trouble anticipating not what they're going to do, but what decision he's going to make. And he just relies on his athleticism to get high enough to challenge the shot. And sometimes it works. More often than not, it doesn't. And that's something that will mentally click in for him in a couple of seasons. But as it stands right now, yes, those guys with that exquisite footwork, they can definitely take advantage of him. And like I said, he is going to have help defensively. For instance, if he has Jonathan Isaac on the floor, Jonathan Isaac is a bit better at this stage of his career. He's now in his second year, but he is still in many ways a rookie. He only played 25 games in his first season, but those guys help each other out a lot. If Aaron Gordon is on the floor with them, usually it's Jonathan Simmons, but Jonathan Simmons has been starting lately in place of Jonathan Isaac and Wes Iwundu. So if you have Gordon on the floor, he's a great help defender, and he's somebody that the Magic would probably be more thrilled about matching up with Sabonis. But he'll probably match up between Sabonis and Victor Oladipo. He's so versatile on that end of the floor that you want Aaron Gordon placed against the guy who's doing the most damage to you. So I would anticipate it would start probably with Mo Bamba. And if Sabonis is able to take advantage of him early, I wouldn't be surprised if they see somebody like a Jonathan Simmons or an Aaron Gordon try to get run on him, because they're just smarter defenders and they're not going to let him get the easy buckets. They're going to make him take the more difficult shots.
The flip side of my earlier question of what matchups are you afraid of, what do you think the Magic are going to try to go at to get some easy points?
Whenever I think of easy points, I just think of Nikola Vucevic, because it's funny at this point. His jumper is silky smooth right now. He's hitting the three ball over 40%, so you can't let him have space out there. So he gets the ball exactly where he wants right now. As long as that three ball is dropping, he's going to get the ball within 10 feet of the basket every single time, because defenders are going to afford him that space. And when he gets that space, there's just nobody who can one-on-one defend him right now. So that's the easiest way for the Magic to get points. But with that being said, Steve Clifford, in his time with Charlotte, he was number one last year in off-ball action, just in terms of off-ball movement, guys setting screens, guys chasing around the perimeter off pick and rolls. So there's a lot of movement. The Magic are one of the best in the NBA in terms of assist to turnovers to ball movement. So they create, they're not great one-on-one players. So I wouldn't anticipate any individual matchup to pay off more than another one, other than Nikola Vucevic in the post. But with that being said, their off-ball movement, They're six in assists right now in the NBA. They're second in assists to made field goals. So all of their offensive actions come from team ball, so to speak, come from those chasing around on the defender, getting underneath guys and finding the easy basket underneath to Aaron Gordon, second chance opportunities to guys like that. So in terms of 3-point shooting, that's not going to beat you. They are one of the leading teams in mid-range shots. So pretty much working off pick and rolls and just getting a little bit of space to take those shots is usually how they're going to take advantage of a good defensive team like the Pacers.
Yeah, that's a good point. Ball movement will do it, and the Pacers do not really switch a ton off ball. They don't have a lot of like-sized dudes to be able to do that, so could get some mismatches in that way. Third game in four nights for the Magic, but what is your official prediction? Do they win this one, or do the Pacers find a way to beat them? The hardest question. I always make people answer it.
Because usually the teams that give me more concern are the offensive-minded guys, because the Magic just seemingly can't keep up. But this looks like a classic, like 101-99 final score in which
the Pacers just played 96-90 against Chicago.
All right, so that's pretty close on. I think the Pacers are the better team. So I'll go ahead and give it to the Pacers. I'll say they're going to win 102-99. But I mean, these teams are going to see each other a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if it went back and forth, but the Pacers are just so good defensively right now, and they play the Magic's brand of basketball. So it's really just going to come down to who's going to win those individual one-on-one matchups. And I'd like to say that right now, Terrence Ross and Nikola Vucevic are winning those battles. But with that being said, the Pacers are what, 14-10 right now, 13-10 right now. So I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going to go with the Magic. Why not? Magic here. I'm going to say the Magic are going to win 102-99. That doesn't definitively designate how the overall series is going to go, but it's at home. I think the Magic have won something like seven of their last nine games, excluding that West Coast road trip, those games where Aaron Gordon did not play against the Blazers and the Warriors. But other than that, they've been playing a really good basketball. They really shut down the Miami Heat last night. So let's go ahead and give it to the Magic.
Yeah, you know what? I think this is going to be the Pacers' toughest game of the week. I can't believe I'm saying the Pacers' toughest game of the week is the Orlando Magic, but here we are. I'm just not used to the Magic being good yet. It'll come as the season goes along. But yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it could be a very tight, low-scoring game. Both teams really slow in pace, below 100 possessions per game. And I also actually am going to pick the Magic. I really am. They got some length now, which is something I wasn't really afraid of them having last year. DJ Augustine's been quality handling the ball. I just think there's a lot of stuff that the Pacers should be afraid of. And like you said, they're swarming on D this year, and Tyreek's going to turn it over a bunch. So I just think the Magic are going to win.
All right. Well, I didn't think for the world of me that we would agree on that. the one thing I will say is that the Magic don't beat themselves, and the Pacers are, point of fact, the better team right now. So if the Pacers do beat themselves, if they get beat in the turnover game, I know that's the old cliche, but if the Pacers give the Magic opportunities, that's how the Magic are going to capitalize.
Yeah, I think that's the case. A lot of times the Bulls beat themselves last night, did not get to the free throw line enough. Preston, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again. You are a great guest.
Oh, thanks, man. I'd love to. And I've got a couple of pods of my own, so we'll have to have you on that one. In fact, if you want to send me this one, maybe I'll just throw this on the Do You Believe in Magic podcast.
I'll absolutely send it to you after this. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
You got it, dude.
So after this Magic game, we will see the Kings again. And I'm sad we never got a Kings guest on this year, but thankfully the games are close enough back to back that I feel like I have a good enough grip on the Sacramento Kings to talk about them for a little bit. This won't be too long. I just want to talk about some adjustments I think the Pacers can make to be better suited next time against the Kings. I don't think necessarily did anything that bad last Saturday in that 111-110 loss, which we didn't talk about a ton. Me and Adam did a little bit. But there are some tiny things they can do that I think would be better. So for starters, Bojan's not going to play that good again, which is an important starting point here. 27 points on 19 shots is really good, but the Kings weren't like I don't know. It's not like the Kings defended him that poorly. Like Shumpert did okay when he was matched up on him, and the other Bogdanovich. I feel like they both play up when they play each other, which is really funny. Did an okay job, but Justin Jackson, I think, had a few possessions on him. He didn't do a bad job either. So that's not going to happen again. Thaddeus Young went 6-for-8, and he's been in the middle of a kind of rough stretch. I don't think that's going to happen again. So they're going to have to find a way to get some points elsewhere. And I think that there is a hole that they didn't go at as much as I would have liked, and that's Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield is not a great defender at all. Buddy Hield can really shoot. He deserves to be out on the floor and probably starting for the Kings. But he's not a good defender, and I think they need to... If the Pacers want to find a way to take down the Kings, they need to go at Buddy Hield a bit more. And I think Tyreke Evans is actually a key in this game. Excuse me. He had 12 points in the last Kings game, which is a little bit above his season average. And he took 12 shots, though, to get there. And I think a lot of that is just the way that he plays. He takes some bad shots, but I think they can get him going if they really focus on going. Not necessarily having him be a guy scoring in sets, but more being a guy who scores within the flow of the offense. Let him like take it up the floor and have Darren Collison operate off ball, because Fox is just up in his grill the whole time. De'Aaron Fox guarded him like 30 feet from the rim, so Collison's not going to be super threatening if that's the case. And I mean, it spaces the floor a ton when that stuff happens, and Collison's able to be a nice initiator when that's happening. He had 12 assists for a reason. But you can run more stuff through Evans, have him take the ball up the floor, immediately have Sabonis or Turner set a screen, and then he can create that way. I know he's not going to finish at the rim necessarily unless he's got a wide open layup. He's really struggled in that way this year, but I think you can get him going, because Buddy Hield will get lost in pick and roll defense if you go at him enough. And I would set some screens with Thad. Thaddeus Young is a good screener. That's a little too gross. Thaddeus Young is not a bad screener. How about that? I don't know if he's necessarily good. And I think using him more with Bielitsa on him, or whoever the heck actually starts at the four for them when their whole team is healthy. I don't know if they are actually missing anyone last time. But that's a duo that you can get some points on. And Bielitsa played well in that first game, and he's played really well all season. But that's a hole that they did not attack enough. And Thad did a good job on Bielitsa in the post. Recognizing he's a bad defender and making timely cuts is good. But you gotta take more advantage of that, and I think they will. But that's just something that I personally would like to see them go after. I think that can help them manufacture a few more points. And then on the second unit, Sabonis is not going to shoot 3-for-7 again. Kosta Kuvas did well against him, but all season long, Sabonis has done fine against whoever he's matched up with. It's weird that Kosta Kufis suddenly is the guy that can shut him down, and I don't think that's a lasting thing. I think that Kosta Kufis just had a sensational defensive game. I think Sabonis will get going a little more and make up for some of the lost points from Bojan and Thad. And just in general, I think they'll play Holiday a few more minutes, not tire out the guards as much. He didn't play in the second half rotation at all. And keep getting McDermott going. They did not necessarily care for him off ball as much. They're good on ball defensive second unit, but Troy Williams lost him a few times. So keep Doug McDermott moving. But really, it's going to be about feeding Sabonis to me. He had 7 turnovers. That's not going to happen again. Kufis is not going to have this effect on Sabonis again. So really get the ball into Sabonis' hands on the second unit. Let him distribute. Let him do the things that he does well. Let him set quality screens. Mixing and matching Evans into the second unit might actually be a good move too. I think Aaron Holiday's shooting could fit well with some of the starters too. So maybe not necessarily a bad idea. Not switching a lineup, but maybe staggering the rotation a bit differently to force those matchups would be a strategy that I would like to see. And then on the flip side, to shut down the Kings a little bit more, they scored 111, which isn't a lot, but it just feels like a lot for Pacers games. So they got to slow down the Kings a little more to me if they're going to win this one, especially on a back-to-back. Buddy Hield had 18. He took 9 threes. That's his thing. And I feel like he missed 7 of them, but I felt like a lot of them were open. So be mindful of where Buddy Hield is. Tyreek Evans, he's a good perimeter on-ball defender, not a good off-ball defender. So just remember where Buddy Hield is. Don't lose him. Same thing with Willie Cauley-Stein. And this one is weird because they were blitzing De'Aaron Fox. They were saying, okay, you're going to beat us with 2 guys looking right at you. He had 6 turnovers. It worked. But he got fouled a lot when he would beat those blitzes. They would have to have a late rotation come to help, and they fouled. He had 7 free throw attempts, and other times he would just lob it up to Willie Cauley-Stein. So be prepared to backpedal. I think De'Aaron Fox is fast, but I think he's young and turnover-prone enough that you can get away with giving him a little bit more than they were giving him the first time to cut off some of those lobs to Cauley-Stein and to just stop him from getting through him. And Cauley-Stein, too, was a beast on the glass, 6 offensive rebounds. Turner's got to be better about being mindful of where he is at all times to ensure that that doesn't happen again. Second unit, Bogdanovic had 20 points. Didn't feel like he did it anything particularly well. Was just making some tough shots. That's not going to happen again. That's easy. Same with Troy Williams, who hit all 3 of his threes. That is also not going to happen again. So that's just some low-hanging fruit to get some easy points for the second unit. And then incrementally, incrementally, that's not even the word I wanted. I don't even know what I was going for there. If De'Aaron Fox guards Darren Collison 30 feet from the rim, just to have him stay 30 feet from the rim and keep that spacing huge for everybody else. 4-on-4 with a ton of space is way easier to score than 5-on-5 with a ton of space even. So there's just a lot of little things they can do. The Kings are not going to shoot 45% from 3 again, I would imagine. And Fox had a ton of turnovers, but no one else really did. I think they can force the young Kings to turn it over a bit more. And them themselves, 25 turnovers for the Pacers last time, 13 between Collison and Sabonis alone. Just take care of the ball. That seems so obvious. There's so many little, like, tiny obvious things they can do to help them win this game. And I think they will figure this one out because last game of a road trip's a hard one to win. I think that they're better than the Kings, and I think they're going to win this game. So those are the adjustments I'll be looking for. I hope you guys enjoyed the Magic preview with Preston. He was awesome, and enjoyed this little preview-y adjustments thing as well. We'll be back next week to do our normal weekly shows and stuff like that. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon.